Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio. Clipcentral.com.
Adrian Groenewald here, Leadership Transformation Platform. First half hour, our Leadership Masterclass. Been wonderful chatting about the bridge that the leader must build between his or her organization and the context out there. Fascinating. As Alice said, rightfully so, we could have chatted much more. I don't think the next conversation is really much different, potentially. And Nadia, you must stay close with us as we engage Dr. Mario Landman in his capacity as institutional head of Open Window, or rather he's an advisor there at the moment at yes. Open Window. So it's great to have you. And Nadia is the experience management
Student experience
manager. And we're going to look at that a little bit more, what that means in today's world. All right. So, let's look at the bigger picture here. Mario, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You've been in the education space a long time.
Very long time. Over 10 years in various areas, primarily in student support and regulatory compliance. And all of that relates to academic quality assurance. So that's where I've sort of found my niche over the last years.
All right, and you're very involved there with Open Window. Let's look at that a little bit closer. But the bigger context of education, higher education.
Yes.
We've had a lot of challenges reported on over the last few months, last year.
Yes.
Student process, demanding fee, education. What else are there? There's quite a few things that that's disrupting this part of our society.
Yeah, and that's sort of where I find myself in a consultancy capacity now, is to try and lead and educate private hire providers in navigating this very dynamic space that we currently find ourselves in. Yes, apart from the things in the news, there's a different pressure on parents and sponsors. A conversation 15 years ago would go something to the effect of, I want my child to be happy. I want my child to study something that he finds interesting, and maybe he makes a success of it. But if he doesn't, he can always work in daddy's spare shop. The conversation now is very different. People are looking at private higher education, or to tertiary tuition in general, as an investment in the financial sense of the term.
Okay.
They want to know what their return on investment is going to be. They want to know how quickly their children will become independent and self-sufficient. They want to know about the quality of the tuition, how it aligns to the industry standards and the needs of the industry. And there's a desperation there that we haven't seen before now.
Yeah, I mean, we jumped off the big picture very fast. I mean, what are the things changing this whole industry? You're saying the expectations are changing.
Yes.
Okay, now before we get there, I mean, that's getting closer to the solution. We have policy changes pertaining to access to education happening on the bigger scale.
Yeah.
Ongoing uncertainties pertaining to recent conversations, calls to action around the National Skills Development Strategy. Uncertainty of the validity of pass rates at matric level. So we don't know really what kind of students are going into the higher education sphere.
Yeah.
Quality of graduates from public. And so now we have this thing between public education at school level and then also post-school, so higher education, private and public.
Yes.
All right, so we've got that battle. Mm-hmm. People's perceptions are private is much better.
Well, I think that perception is based, was bolstered recently. Things like the Fees Must Fall campaign, immediately what that evokes is a sense of, if fees are falling, then quality is falling. If quality is falling, the validity of the tuition is falling.
Mm.
It's somehow going to become misaligned to what the industry needs. So the parents we speak to in counseling sessions make this very clear, that where they would previously not consider a private institution, they now feel that due to the dynamism that you spoke about earlier, that private education is able to pursue, it's a better fit. They have a better chance of getting those students up and running. Due to the fact that private providers are more responsive to the needs of the industry.
And when I give money to a private institution for the education of my child, or as a sponsor, I see it as an investment.
Yes.
While if it's to a public entity, I see it as what? A tuition fee.
A tuition fee.
Yeah, and what? That brings quite a different perspective
yes.
for those who are delivering, for the educators, the lecturers, the teachers, the perception on that side versus the perception of those who put money in, and then you have the actual recipient in the middle, the student.
Yes,
and all of that impacts on the student.
So the massive paradigm shift is where you were teaching, you are now protecting an investment. You are now facilitating learning as opposed to the traditional talk and chalk approach. So that's a very, very different space to be in. That's where student support comes in, and Nadia can speak more about student experience management, which is now the term that we're using. Student support is a reactive model. It's a obsolete model from the past. Student experience management is a far more dynamic model that looks at short-term and long-term interventions.
We'll just definitely unpack that for you in itself.
To identify student disengagement way before it results in the failing of a module or whatever the case is. But also to reshape the institution in response to these flags of disengagement, to make sure that there's long-term sustainability and improvement of a student experience.
Okay, but then we have the backdrop here, Nadia and Alice. We've got our economic conditions. So we're in an economy where it's very expensive private education versus public.
Yeah, it's a luxury, really.
It's a luxury. Yeah. But we also believe and see why there's an attitudinal approach to better education when it comes to private institutions. But we have the economic reality, an economy that's growing, hardly growing.
The historical context.
The historical context. Yeah. I mean, you can start building this picture. So now you really need a radical approach to balance the economic versus private versus public versus, I don't know, we need something here, Nadia?
Well, essentially what makes this an exciting topic for me is actually unpacking the student experience management process. So essentially, as Dr. Landman had indicated, all of a sudden we now need to basically ensure that our graduates pass the first time. We can't really have the luxury of slipping a couple of subjects, rewriting at the end of the year, etc., because essentially, most of our graduates need to start working as soon as possible. They're either assisting a family, a community, etc. So there's literally a sense of ethics that now comes into play as well. So as
because the old model is I send my child to university. He or she discovers I don't want to do engineering or it's too tough, too rough. I'm not ready for it anyway because maybe I come from a school that didn't equip me properly. So let me move to another degree or another opportunity. And that jumping around is not a good student experience.
No, absolutely.
I mean, it's not a good investment. It's not a good economic model for the sponsor or the parent or the student him or herself. It doesn't work out so lekker.
And even the institution, if you look at that, so having a class sit or a student sit in class for the first semester in jewelry design and moving on to agricultural studies in the second semester means that that student wasn't actually equipped with a proper decision-making process to understand what it is that I want to do, understanding that the industry might change, the job that he might have in his mind might not even exist at the time of qualification. And I'm an ideal example of that. I wanted to become a lithographer.
And a what?
A lithographer.
Lithographer.
Yes, so essentially the person making computer or plates for printing.
Printing.
So
lithography.
You would know. You're an editor.
The year that I qualified, the entire industry went computer to plate, essentially wiping out that entire qualification.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So I had to very quickly change my plans and essentially understand what I had with me in terms of my qualification and how I could actually address that. But essentially, you need to make a decision, which is actually the institution's responsibility to guide you, not only based on your matric results, etc., but also, as we've mentioned, the types of skills equip you to understand what that career will entail. So, you know, if it's going to be sitting behind a computer all day, is that something that you'll enjoy doing? So essentially, the responsibility lies as much with the institution to guide not only the student but also the parents through that process in terms of academic and non-academic factors to measure.
Okay, so you're now starting to unpack the student experience management approach that certainly Open Windows is tackling.
Absolutely.
So okay, Alice, you come in here, but then let's dig in deeper. In a very idiot way for someone like me, just explain the student experience management. What's different from the old educational management that you are now disrupting potentially? Alice?
That's exactly the point I wanted to raise, you know, student experience for dummies. The question I have, or the sort of comment I want to make, is that I'm sitting here listening to the doctor here and thinking, which period would I have preferred to have been a student? Back in the 90s or in 2016? And I just can't seem to figure out that, you know, much has changed. Maybe it's because, you know, I'm no longer a student, but maybe Nadia and the doctor could speak to that in terms of what has changed that constitute the student of today and the student of tomorrow. Because what I'm hearing is that there's still a lot of hand-holding. Mm. There's still a lot of spoon-feeding. And at the same time, we have not moved or shifted away from the sort of sausage factory kind of, you know, produce them, push them out type of a thing. I'm still hearing a lot of about equipping people, you know, for jobs. But obviously, you know, everyone's talking social entrepreneurship and that sort of thing today. You know, be your own boss, that kind of a thing. So just throwing the cat among pigeons there.
Yeah, normal schools are just way behind equipping our kids for this world. The world is just too fast. The question now is, are we getting closer to filling that gap? If we look at our first half hour conversation and the education models we have now, Doctor?
I think to answer the question bluntly, not much has changed. And I think that's a problem. The problem is that South Africa is still fairly behind when it comes to teaching methodology. We are still in some way thinking that you can take what is in a lecturer's mind and somehow transfer it exactly into a student's mind. It just doesn't work that way. The best we can do, and I mean, this is a very controversial statement, and I mean, it's a topic for a discussion on its own. But the international, the forward-thinking philosophy around teaching and learning now is that you can't teach anybody anything. The reality is that the best you can do is to facilitate a milieu of learning. And that, I think, is what we're trying, that's the shift that needs to happen in South Africa. We're still trying to teach people where we actually should try and create environments for learning. Open Window, and why we found such a good touch point with Open Window is one of the very few private education institutions that get this. They realize that you could have a best lecturers, you could have every possible resource available, but if a student disengages for whatever reason, I mean, there's a myriad of reasons, and that basically what student experience management is trying to identify what those reasons are and rolling those stumbling blocks out of the way. But we need to make that shift. I mean, there's so many examples from around the world. The MIT institution from America, a couple of years ago, I was watching TED Talks, and they said they made the very controversial decision to make all of their courseware free. Why is that? Because they realize that their role in society is no longer an institution of teaching. The teaching takes the form of assessment, in other words, of conferring of knowledge being transferred, but it's up to the student, and it's up to the milieu in which the student lives and finds himself to facilitate the learning.
Again, that's assuming that the education, the school experience leading up to to that is intact.
The entire system needs to shift. It doesn't need to shift on tertiary level. It needs to shift from a very, very lowest level, the very grassroots level of education in the country. And we simply don't seem to make that shift very quickly. There are some forward-thinking intellectuals in this country, but in the general public milieu, it's still very much, I talk, you listen, you pass if you want to or if you can.
Doctor, just on that point then, is it a policy issue or is it a psychological issue for us as a developing economy to not get this at this point?
It's a cultural one, it's everything, yeah.
It is certainly a cultural issue. It is a historic issue in our country. It has got very much to do with the history of our South Africa and how we developed. We essentially went into a phase of stagnation for many, many years due to apartheid. It's not just... I was watching a documentary the other day about how apartheid influenced the wrestling community in South Africa. And how we couldn't compete internationally because we didn't have exposure, and all of these techniques were developing overseas and we just didn't have exposure to it. So when we finally got the opportunity, we were doing very poorly. But anyways, it's a similar scenario. We lived in isolation for so long that we were basically forced into a time capsule. And when we came out of a time capsule, we were where the rest of the world was at the beginning of the 1980s. And we are very slowly starting to awaken from that slumber and realizing that there is a massive shift that needs to happen. We need to prepare students for, like Nadia said, careers that don't even exist anymore. And the only way to do that is through this can't teach anybody philosophy.
But let me just, I'm 48, and I have a couple of friends who have left the country and did very well as entrepreneurs in most cases, some with corporate careers, but in general entrepreneurs. So something was right. You know, did they learn some valuable life skills in some way, shape, or form? Maybe it lay in the family rather than education. Maybe it's a values thing rather than skills. I don't know what it is. One of hardworking, one of
luck as well.
Yeah, but so many of them, South Africans in general, a certain generation, are doing very well overseas because they work so damn hard. Louis?
And the wisdom of the attitude, you can't teach people anything. From a leadership point of view, it's a very important concept. Because if you believe you can't teach by telling, other people acknowledge, they write their tests, they give their answers, they tick the choice boxes. But if you believe you can't teach, then you have to move into the next process, which gives people to think and respond. That's why we say we create some of the best content in the country in Africa on leadership development, transformation leadership. But it only starts working when the people start discussing it and applying it. So this is the principle, the confidence you should have in people. What I teach you is not getting through, but let's see you apply it, and then there's conversations around that. It's a very important thing.
In fact, what Doctor just said, that we need to be creating an environment for learning. It's essentially coming through, even as, you know, some of us raise children today. Because, you know, I had a parent here the other day, and he said it's becoming difficult to raise children when they have so much access to information. You know, you think you got to teach them something, but it's often them that teach you something because they already know. Technology has exposed them to a whole range of things before you, with your parent thinking, think you can reach them. So it's fundamental what Dr. Lan just said.
Okay, Nadia, we assume people know Open Window. I think it's come out in the process, but just take 30 seconds and then your comments. But you guys do what? You have a film school?
Yes, we've got a film school. We've got a school for design studies. We also have...
Design studies, not fashion design?
No. That's basically graphic design, elements of photography, illustration. We're also starting a school for entrepreneurship, basically looking at a one-year program, looking at new venture creation, which we're very excited about. We've also got our film school, which is actually a division for film arts led by Pluto, a very dynamic individual, where basically he feels he's actually creating the next generation of problem solvers as well. So essentially within these schools, we're basically through elements such as student experience management, ensuring that our students actually have the right experience, basically meaning that academic and non-academic factors are measured. We're basically ensuring that the skills and qualifications that they gain, including softer skills such as leadership, access to industry, etc., are garnered and actually experienced during the entire process of learning, so that by the time that they emerge as a graduandi, they basically are empowered to either start their own companies, walk into a company with the exposure, hands-on experience. And we'll actually be sharing a lot of those type of success stories from our alumni on our open day on the 21st of May as well.
Now, a quick question from me. Talk about UX. When I visited Open Window, there was this phrase, buzzword UX. What is that? How do you teach that? What does that involve?
So the interesting
part... Sounds so cool.
It is. So UX design, and we've actually got a faculty of interaction studies and interaction arts. It's led by a very dynamic head of school called Nadia. She basically drives a lot of qualification around the application and development or design of different things, whether it's applications, websites, etc., and looking at everything from a user experience perspective. So, you know, in the past, if you had a website, absolutely great. But essentially, the UX design component, and that's basically what student experience design is also, it's applied to the end user, making it user-friendly, making it relevant, looking at adapting those type of tools to industry and market and being responsible with your design. So it's not just a singular element to that. So very, very excited about the development of that faculty as well.
Excellent.
So let me just understand. So in other words, it's not educating in isolation anymore.
No.
It's educating in the context of the world where it's going. It's educating in the context of the businesses where these young people may enter. It's educating in the context of, I might start my own business pretty soon. Because when I leave at the age of 22 or 23, 24, I will have skills that the world needs, and they actually need my leadership as well on top of that, because it's so out. It's so, not outdated, that's the wrong word.
Outmoded.
Yeah, well, the environment I go into is so outmoded, but they've come to a realization they need me, so now I have to lead. As a youngster, I've got to lead as a designer or as a, I don't know.
In fact, starting with yourself. You got to lead yourself first to even be able to navigate this world with all the opportunities that are there, right, Nadia?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the more you expose today's graduates to those type of experience, to industry, afford them the ability to collaborate internationally, you know, with some of the best brands and the best companies out there, you give them the best opportunity to not only understand where they are now, but essentially where that career can take them in the future.
All right. Doctor, tell us some final comments. You guys also, to try and expand your context and to offer more in terms of student management experience, in terms of whatever, you talk of the partnerships. I mean, you have different kind of partnerships, like the foundation in Copenhagen. Is that right? Interaction Design Foundation in Copenhagen. What is that, and why do you bring that into the picture, for example? But partnerships play a big role here. Even Open Window cannot do what we're talking about here in isolation.
No, absolutely not.
I think Nadia has more information on that.
So around the Interaction Design Foundation in Copenhagen, essentially that also provides us with insight in terms of international trends and design philosophies, etc., that can encapsulate not only our lecturers, but also looking at facilitating guided engagements to our students. So as I've mentioned, in terms of our Faculty of Interaction Design, quite important to make sure that it's relevant not only to the local economy, the local industry, but that it's relevant and also comparable on an international level from our relationships and partnerships with industry. So, you know, even this for us is a very valuable partnership, because essentially it gives us the exposure to give our students access to new ways of thinking and questioning that what they're doing every single day. So essentially, if you keep on or breeding that philosophy of continuous learning, you're going to question everything and see how it applies. Is it relevant? How does it actually impact the outcome through the education pathway as well?
Okay, Dr. Landman, final comments on where we're going. I mean, for me, I guess it's about empowering the South African graduate to more than survive in the modern workplace,
yes,
or the modern world, but to thrive, in fact.
Yeah.
But your final comments on
how that works is, and how it ideally should work is, it's the major shift I want to see is in teacher education. I want to see teacher education becoming facilitation education. What I mean by that is, I want to see teachers facilitating the transfer of knowledge, but then facilitating a milieu in which students can make mistakes, test, integrate what they've learned, share what they've learned, and in that process, integrate that knowledge into their personal knowledge. I want to see that happening. But for that to happen, there's major policy changes that need to happen, curricula that needs to change, and that has to happen from a very top. So from a very high level, a government perspective, we need to get buy-in into what these international trends are teaching us, and that needs to filter through to teacher education.
Thank you so much. We're out of time. We must get you back on the education show and even the transformation show, because there we can debate a little bit more, and we talk to school principals at this stage, and I think we need to expand the content on that show. Mm-hmm. But we've got to bring this thinking into that half hour. Somehow we have to do that. We have to transform the education system from a psychological point of view, from a curriculum point of view,
from an outcomes point of view.
From an outcomes, but we used to call it outcome-based education.
Yeah, I didn't understand what it meant.
Yes. All right, thank you so much. It's been great having you with us. That was a fascinating conversation. Just to end off with very quickly, our Sibanye Executive Leadership Inspirational Thought. It comes from Dr. Wynand Goosen. True human greatness lies in how we behave when we differ from each other. True human greatness lies in how we behave when we differ from each other. And we have so much difference in this world. But how do we behave? You know, do we do it through the... we can come with so many bad examples of this and so many good examples. Next up, our business master class. It's going to be about HR practices. It's in association with USB Ed, University Stellenbosch Education Division, and it's all about human resource policies and procedures with Andre Willemse, an expert there. So stay with us for the next hour, and then we'll engage a SME owner, a very interesting one, social entrepreneur, in the second half of the show.
This is CliffCentral.com.